Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today, I have a very, very accomplished lady, Aparna Jain, on our show. Aparna, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh.
Aparna is an executive leadership coach called Zebra Works. She's a diversity and inclusion trainer. She's spent 23 years in the corporate world with India Today and Tehelka, and she's an author.
And in technology before that.
Wonderful. So, Aparna, tell me a little bit about your early career.
It was very strange. I actually started off when I was very young. I had neighbors who were in the hotel industry. Mm-hmm. And I was, this is what I want to do. I want to be in the hotel industry. So I decided to do hotel management and I went to Switzerland and I studied over there. And then I came back to India. I did a postgraduate with the Oberoi School of Hotel Management. Mm-hmm. And then I started to work and I just, within like about, I think, a really short year, I decided it was not for me.
Okay.
I did learn a lot of lessons though. Very young, already my first lessons about sexism and how people in the corporate world don't protect women enough, etc. So that was a big eye-opener. I also learned to be very tough, which has helped me in good stead. I was always tough. I became tougher. And then what I had done was a double specialization in food and beverage and sales and marketing. So I decided to take the sales marketing bit and I joined one of the first telecom companies. I then moved to Chennai and I joined one of the first telecom companies over there, which was then called Skycell. And we were right at the cusp of the beginning of the cellular technology. Worked in marketing over there, then moved to another tech company, moved to Bangalore, with a hardware software company called Saskin. And then being in Bangalore, it was so bad for my asthma that I was on 8 inhalers a day. And my doctor pretty much told me that you need to move now. Otherwise, you will die. At that point of time, I was very keen on living. I moved bag and baggage within a week to Delhi. Luckily, I have family here and I still live with my family. I have my aunt and uncle here who've really been my, you know, my bedrock for my development. And I came here and I joined media. So I was then in media for about 10 years. So that's really early life.
So I'm going to come to your media part also.
Sure.
But, you know, tell me about leadership coaching. What is leadership coaching?
So at the age of 40, I was like, this is really completely toxic, the corporate world. And I was like, I need to do something that would enable other people to not have the same experiences I had. So I came from that place. And I knew that there were a lot of coaching courses available here, but I knew that they weren't of the same caliber that I would get abroad. And I knew I had to invest time and money. So I used up all my savings and I basically started a course in Canada, which was spread over 18 months. So you had to go do the course, come back, do all your work, practice, phone coaching, etc. And I qualified as a lead. I qualified as a coach.
Okay.
But being in the corporate world, I wanted to focus on women, leadership, making the workplace a much more healthy environment. A leadership coach basically works with people across levels of the organization, mostly senior organization leaders. And everybody has their own challenges that come in their way. And it's to really work on those habits and the behavior and take them out of it. Change is slow, change is long. It's really about that. It's about driving change down the organization. It's about bringing a presence to work that you never had before. It's especially useful in tough times because that's when you're really pushed to your worst and you're most stressful, especially in today's environment, for example. A company that's growing, people who are going to retire shortly because they really don't know what's ahead. So it's a bunch of things.
Okay.
So that's really what I work with them on.
Wonderful. So tell me, you know, I've spoken to many people who are coaches. I coach CEOs myself after 40 years. As someone who's been trained so extensively, who needs a coach?
All of us. I need a coach. You need a coach. All of us need a coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think getting a third person's perspective, somebody who's trained to recognize the psychological and behavioral symptoms and the signs and the way you speak, the way you come across. We pick up on stuff and you're trained to pick up on stuff that other people don't pick up on. So I think people misunderstand coaching as mentoring and networking and connecting you to other people, whereas coaching is a deeply behavioral science and you have to constantly qualify to be abreast. So I, for example, have to do at least 3 courses a year to constantly be certified by my institute and to keep up my certification. So it is a continuous process. You learn a lot about yourself, about other people, and it's great to really see change in society.
Yeah. So, you know, coaching has been going on all over the world for a long, long time.
Yes.
But in India, coaching has traditionally been done in the workplace by someone who, as you said, very rightly, mentor. Or in families by an elder.
Yeah.
What is changing in India that I find everyone's talking of getting a coach?
I hope they are. Yeah. I find actually the mentality very different here. I find that people say, if I'm a CEO, I'm great. I don't need a coach. Also, men look to men for some strange reason. There still is sexism in the industry, even as far as coaching goes. Also, I think there are so many coaches with just like a 6-month degree or a small associate certificate that there's a plethora of people you meet who are perhaps not as qualified as the kind of people there are. So then people have a bad rap also, like, oh, I've met this person and I didn't really particularly find them of any interest. So it can get a bad rap too. And you know, there's no one to blame for that. It's just that it's the easiest, I think, transition for most people once they leave the workplace.
Correct.
So that, and I think people don't understand the difference between coaching and mentoring. They're two very different things.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a coachee's perspective, what can a coach do for them, as either as an entrepreneur or as a professional?
A lot. So I do believe that when you look at yourself in the mirror, you know who you are.
Correct.
A lot of people have imposter syndrome, for example, right? When you work on the things that really are under your skin and the surface, for example, I know a lot of people who walk into a party and they're very uncomfortable. And that's because they don't feel they're good enough. They could be the biggest company CEOs, but they could be from a small town. So their bravado is very different. But deep inside, when they see somebody who's, they perceive as sophisticated, they find it tough. I know a lot of CEOs who have huge anger management issues, huge stress issues, unable to be present, mostly distracted. And for an entrepreneur, it's great because when you're building a company, you start building right.
Correct.
All right. You build for the team.
Yeah.
You build for yourself. I mean, I have worked now with two companies. I'm coaching 40 people in one company. I'm coaching 10 people in another company. Both are young, medium-sized companies. Mm-hmm. And they've extended it for everybody, for manager and above. Mm-hmm. Now, that is fabulous because you're actually investing in the company's health and the company's growth. So everybody at all levels will grow. So forget the political problems, but at least in terms of development, they're growing.
I agree. So, you know, I worked with a couple of people who would be finding it very difficult to handle failure.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What are your thoughts, I mean, on failure? You know, because as Indians particularly, we have never been taught that it's okay to fail.
Yes. Actually, you know, you'd be surprised. I believe that Indians are very resilient.
Correct.
We are resilient in many ways.
Yeah.
For example, we are resilient about traffic. Mm-hmm. We are resilient about the weather. We are resilient about living in a scrimpy fashion when we need to. We are very risk averse in many ways. Like, there's a lot of like inherent, you know, resilience built into our system. Because we've been a scarce economy for so long, right? Like, we've grown up not having everything. Of course, this generation is a little different.
Right.
But the flip side of that is when it comes to studies and work and performance, all Indians have this horrific pressure of being the best.
Mm.
So even when you're in school, you're like, come first, come second. How come you didn't come better? It's not about how is my child developing as a person? Is my child a kind person? Is my child doing well in all other facets? Are they perhaps a good sports person? We don't know. Like, there's so many different facets, right? But it's always about being the first. This inherent pressure, I feel, gives us some kind of phobia in terms of failure. I have seen very few parents say to their children, it's okay, you know, here's what you did well, here's what we could work on for the next time, which I think is very important. And in the workplace, what happens is that everybody's so busy trying to prove themselves, and there's a lot of testosterone in the air. And so failure is like, if I don't do well, for A, my appraisals will get affected.
Correct.
People will not look upon me as a leader.
Yeah.
I need to be the best. I cannot show any cracks in my system. And that, I feel, is a fallacy of our inherent upbringing.
Correct. Very well said. Very well said. So I've got a couple more questions for coaching before we move to the next section. From the coachee's perspective.
Yes.
How can that individual evaluate the coach?
Hmm. I think it's very simple. Mm. I've had people say to me after sessions that that was a great session for me. I think from a coach's perspective, when they understand a little bit more about themselves that they perhaps weren't seeing or hasn't been pointed out to them in a specific way, or there's, you see these aha moments in their head when you're talking to them, right? And also when they do the work that's needed to be done, it's very easy for me to come in and talk to somebody, but the work has to be done by the coachee. Mm. If the coachee doesn't do the work, there's no change. And I find people can get lazy about that. So when I give them the assignments and I give them what to do and I make them work towards it, I find when they do it and they see that, oh, this changed for me, that works. So this makes sense.
Okay.
Or I'm not feeling that anxious anymore. And this is working for me. So it's a bunch of things. I think everybody has a different barometer.
Absolutely. So my last question, Aparna,
yes,
to you, and that is, you know, you said you're one place you're coaching 40 people.
Yes.
And in that large number of people, there must be lots of millennials.
There are a lot of, I mostly coach millennials nowadays.
So how is it, how are millennials different from the previous generations from a coach's perspective?
You'd be surprised. I've had my most incredible moments with millennials in terms of, I'm astounded by what they can do at such a young age. Mm-hmm. All right. I find the people who are older, suffer much more from existential kind of angst and very deep rooted habits. Mm-hmm. Millennials are bright. You know, they're sparkling. They're so multi-talented. Mm-hmm. Their issues come from more like, again, failure, anxiety, how will I handle these relationships? But it's great because there's so much, synchronicity when you're with a millennial and they really are appreciative. I know somebody who said, Aparna, ever since you've started to work with me, my superpower is awareness.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
So it's fabulous that they can process differently. Mm. And I enjoy working with them.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So Aparna, let's move on. Let's talk about your avatar as an author.
Yeah.
Tell me about your books. You know, the first one you got is Own It, Leadership Lessons for Women. And second is Like a Girl.
And third is Boys Will Be Boys.
And yes, that's a forthcoming book.
It's already just come out.
Oh,
yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Sorry. Thank you.
Okay.
I've written four books, actually. The first one was a simple family project, which my publisher decided to publish. It was called The Sood Family Cookbook. The second one was really a work of intense research called Own It. I interviewed 200 women in corporate India. Again, at that time, I was getting into the diversity field. I knew that the women coaches were very different than the men, or people who identified as women were very different than the men. Mm-hmm. They had different problems. And I found that it was forming some kind of a very similar pattern. And I identified those 6-7 habits and I wrote on it. And I wrote about, and I spoke to 200 women across corporate India who also brought in like what works, what didn't work, how they handled it, etc. So it was an extensive research book and it did really well. And I think it was one of the first books in India, way before the Me Too movement hit India, that actually spoke about corporate sexual harassment.
Wow.
And women were calling me up and said, we were so angry when we were reading your book because it reminded us of our time when XYZ happened.
Yeah.
So that was my first book. My second book was really simple. It was an extension of women.
Correct.
And
Was Like a Girl.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's really geared towards adolescents and young women and young adults. And that was short biographies of 56 women from India. But I tried to make it detailed and so it was two pages. But it was interesting facts about them that perhaps were not in the mainstream. And then just as an extension of that, my publisher insisted that I do one called Boys Will Be Boys on 46 Men.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And what's the reaction of your readers to multiple books? And you must be getting a lot of interesting feedback.
I think Like a Girl was quite a phenomenon because it was the first book in the market, Indian market of that kind. Mm-hmm. We had 27 artists, we had beautiful diagrams and like illustrations, and a lot of women were like, you know, this is the book we need for our girls. Mm-hmm. When I wrote Boys Will Be Boys, I had a lot of women saying that, oh, thank God, now we finally have different kind of men to look up to, because I didn't use anybody from corporate India. I didn't use cricketers, none of that. No YouTubers. But a lot of women were like, no, but that doesn't make sense. Like, you know, however that it is. People are just astounded that I write so much and how can I do this and that. But I am very multitasking.
Terrific.
It's like,
So let's move on and talk about your role as a diversity and inclusion trainer.
Yes.
You know, help me understand what is involved in this kind of training.
It's very different. So, I mean, I think I have to say again that there are a lot of companies that are very keen on diversity. And for them, the tick mark is how, what is the percentage of ratio of the genders, right? And diversity goes way beyond that. It goes into ageism. It goes into people with disabilities. It goes into all sorts of genders, LGBTQIA+. It goes into mental health. So there's a it's a very wide spectrum, and you have to and it goes into caste and religion, of course, right? And people don't understand that. So the first thing most corporates focus on is gender diversity. Now, that is the first kind of course I do, where I have a four-hour workshop with people across manager and above level, where we take them through the difference between the genders and how from a very young age, a woman is treated differently or a girl is treated differently, and therefore how it translates into adult life. And then we talk about, and we have case studies, et cetera, et cetera. And then we do a bit of sexual harassment training in that. Okay. And then my next workshop is more like a cultural sensitization workshop, where I cover everything else. And it's great because companies commit to it for their entire organization, and I only do batches of 35 at a time because I need everybody to get it. Questions are much more. And that is almost like my, what can I say? That's my mission.
So tell me, over the years, you know, and you work with so many people, are you seeing attitude of men beginning to change?
Yes, definitely. I think people, I think it started off as being scared, all right? Because, and here's what it is, right? Women have become hyper aware of their rights. Women are very clued on as to what works, what doesn't work, agency, etc., especially if they're from a certain environment. Men are not clued on. So like, I mean, if you just talk even to...
Generally, they aren't.
They, no, well, I just mean in terms
I'm with you.
You know, it's like people don't talk to men about toxic masculinity. Parents don't talk to their children. I mean, I have seen young people, you know, when they have sons, they're like, oh, my son can't get pregnant, so it's okay. But that's not the attitude, right? It's very different. Like, you have to be teaching your sons. And I keep saying, beti padhao is a crock. I was like, it should be beto ko samjhao. Because the problems come from that gender.
Absolutely.
You know?
Right.
And people say, why isn't your mother teaching you? Arey, but why isn't your father teaching
you?
You know, why is the onus always on the mother?
Absolutely. Right.
So I think it's a familial problem, and patriarchy exists everywhere. And yes, I've seen an attitude which was fear, which is fine as a start. And I think slowly men are beginning to understand, but it's a long way off.
It's a long way off,
Ashutosh. It's a mindset change.
Absolutely. So upon my next question is on gender balance. You know, I've sat on global boards, and over the last 15 odd years, certainly in the Scandinavian countries, there's a lot more awareness. And in the last 5-6 years, I'm beginning to see it in India as well. So much so that companies are now trying to find women on their boards because the government has taken it.
Yes, absolutely.
What are your views? I mean, is this largely lip service? And how long do you think there will genuinely be gender balance in our country?
Well, the World Economic Forum has said another 120 years or something like that.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's very far away.
That's frightening.
I think the fact that the government has insisted that there has to be a woman on every board is fabulous.
Wonderful.
I think it forces people to look for women who are smart, bright, and even if it's just a family member. I keep saying, you know, when people give me this whole gyan about, oh, you know, that's just the mother or the sister or whatever. I was like, but there are 10 men on the board who are fathers and brothers and all that. How come you've never brought that up? Like, you know, and so I'm glad that the government has kind of given this push. And in the future, I know people, and it's a proven fact, right, that when you have women on a board, the company does better.
Correct.
It's a proven fact. And I think I appreciate the companies that have 2 or 3 women on their board. So it's great. And I think if you make something mandatory and that becomes the norm, it forces people to think in a different way. So I'm all for it. As to when we are going to be an absolutely diverse country with gender equality, very far away.
Okay. Wonderful. And I'm, you know, I'm not surprised you're saying this because I've spoken to so many ladies on my show. And I don't think anyone has told me so far that... it's around the corner.
Not at all.
Which just means that there's a hell of a lot of work that needs to be done.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it starts from the top. And I think it starts from the men. And when it's lip service from the men, that's problematic. And I can point out, just whenever I have a meeting with a man, I'll take them aside after the meeting and I'll tell them, these are 3 things you said in terms of your language, which is not gender equitable. And they're like, oh my God, I didn't even think of it. you know. Very so true. It's that, yeah.
Very true. So I've got a few questions for you personally.
Now. Yes.
Mm-hmm. In all the companies that you worked on as a coach, as a trainer, as an author, have you had any people who've had an influence on your life?
Mm.
And if yes, what have been your learnings?
Mm. Quite honestly, it's been a little different for me. I tend not to idolize anyone.
Sure.
I have a very clear kind of mindset where I feel idols fall. So I tend not to idolize anyone. Have I had people along the way who've helped me a little bit here and there in terms of things they've said and stuck to my head? Yes. I don't consider anyone my mentor, which is sad because I wish I had a mentor earlier on in life. And that's why I encourage people to have mentors all the time now in the organization to find allies, find mentors. I just think that reading gives me a lot of like insights. I think anybody's behavior, it could be from someone on the street, a complete stranger, it's just something they say that sticks with you. So I think if you pick up from everybody, it's important. I don't think I've had any one inspirational person.
Okay, that's absolutely fine. And if I was to ask you three words or three adjectives that define Aparna, what would they be?
Tenacious.
Okay.
Frank. Mm-hmm. Empathetic within reason.
Okay. I like the word within reason.
Yes.
well said. So let me come back to failure.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And I've, you know, we spoke a little bit about it. And I've often said that because of our children, who we don't say it's okay to fail, it manifests itself in our behavior patterns.
Yes.
And very often, because I'm told I must be first, and I must be ahead of everybody, or some, I've heard parents even say, why are you associating with that individual? You know, you're in the top three, that individual is not in the top three. And yet, we fail. So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from your mistakes or your failures?
When, you know, when I said, you said use a word to describe yourself, and I said tenacious, I think that comes from the fact that I've had to do a lot by myself.
Okay.
I have never been a scared person.
Okay.
I'm pretty fearless. Mm. I think that holds me in good stead. Mm. And I think that when I fail, which has happened many times, I just pick myself up.
Okay.
I don't dwell on it. And I think doing a lot of meditation has also helped me to become finer tuned. There's a fabulous meditation I do every evening, or I try to do every evening, where in the night I look at my day and I look at where I tripped up. So what interaction pissed me off, or what interaction really made me angry, or what didn't go well. And I think about like, oh, what would I have, how could I have changed that interaction, right? Like it's quite a detailed thing that you're going through your entire day. And then I look at my calendar for the next day, or I look at like what could possibly happen, and I say, all right, this is the potential way I could slip up tomorrow. How can I go into this meeting with good intent and change my inherent default reactions?
Correct.
Because especially with people you don't like, or you know, you get this creepy feeling from.
Yeah.
How do I make that? How do I change myself to react differently that could potentially change that meeting? So I do that.
Okay.
And I think that helps me.
Yeah. And that's a form of self-introspection.
That is a form of self-introspection, but it's also a form of helping you not make the same mistake you made today.
Okay.
And I think if you keep making the same mistakes, you're becoming blind by saying, that's just the way I am.
Okay.
It's not helping you. So yes, I think I've just learned along the way to manage failure.
Okay, wonderful. So I have two more questions left for you. You know, in a life well lived, do you have any regrets?
I regret that I didn't have a mentor, anyone who could potentially advise me when I was younger. That is definitely something I wish I had. I don't think I regret it. As in, it's not really affected my life. I think I'm okay.
Okay.
I think I would have liked to be trained in a couple more things, including like art, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, no real regrets. I don't think there's... I don't think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Like, if you regret something, work on it and do it, right?
So what's the point? I agree with you. That's exactly my philosophy.
Yeah.
Don't look back unless like, you want to learn
from
it.
What is the point, you know? So, I mean, I can say I regret this, I regret that, but everybody has those. I regret I wasn't a millionaire.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know.
That's, but I say, one more zero doesn't add anything
exactly.
to my life.
It may to mine, but okay. the point is, there's no point. You work towards it,
sure,
right?
Sure. So my last question to you, you know, there'll be thousands of people who are going to be watching us or listening to us. What would your advice be to a young individual starting up, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22, their life and looking at such a long life ahead from your perspective as a corporate person, as someone who's written a lot and as a coach?
Wow, big one. Go into life and go into everything you do with good intent.
Correct.
Think it's going to work out okay. Don't be suspicious, because that's just such a problem and it's such a fallacy. Be respectful of people, no matter who they are, whether it's some stranger on the street or somebody who's serving you or somebody who's your boss. Don't kiss ass. It's so transparent. Develop yourself. Work on yourself. Be a better person. Just be better.
Wonderful. Aparna, that's been an absolutely incredible conversation.
Thank you, Ashutosh. It's been great
Thank
talking
you so
to
much.
You.
Thank you so much. And all the best.
Thank you. And to you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.